from Wahoo. I'm pleased to be joined this morning by our Chief Judge, Frankie Moore from North Platte, and Mike Pirtle from Omaha. We are live streaming our oral arguments today, so if you're anything in your arguments that you feel is of a sensitive nature, I'd ask you to simply use initials. Please don't be any more specific than you would want to have broadcast across the state, because that's what's going to happen to it. When I call your case, I'll ask you to come forward, then I'll call it a second time. And the reason for that is so that we can keep records of where it is and on the tape. So that's the purpose of that process. First case this morning is the Cattle National Bank and Trust versus Anthony. Ms. Anthony, do I understand that you're representing yourself this morning? And so you'll be arguing on this particular case both of the issues, the yes, this would be 15900 and 1603. Okay? And then and when we finish this, then we'll move on to the other case that's pending, which is the 15899. All right? Very well, the first case is the Cattle National Bank and Trust versus Anthony. You may proceed.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I filed a document in this case. In the document, I've accepted your offer to contact. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you in person, and I would make a humble request to be allowed to read my statement with questions held after that. Very intimidating being up here, and I've been sick for about 3 days, and so I'm difficult. I'm the principal in this matter. I'm entitled to have my questions declaratorily answered in my property title quiet. My titles are the note I signed for Cattle National Bank's alleged loan in the deed of trust, signed to secure my note. Every principal is its own evidence, and plaintiffs need not be proved. I am not here to repeat what Mr. Barber wrote in his. I could not address this issue better. I'm not here to use a copyrighted property, namely Nebraska's special laws, to affect my justice. I'm here, a plain person, an agent for the entity that holds my name, asking this court to settle my issues without subjecting me to rules that govern so-called licensed officers of court. The reason that I'm here primarily, as I said, the argument that I have in the brief and on their own. What I want to talk about in personal capacity here is the fact that Cattle National Bank foreclosed on my home. Cattle National Bank used the trust deed, which is not a contract, it's a unilateral agreement. There's a lot of things I know now I did not know then. They never signed the trust deed. They used that trust deed to foreclose on my house, or deed of trust.
Did you sign it?
I signed it. It's a unilateral agreement.
And so money was borrowed to you, and you agreed to pay back the money.
My signature was used to create the promissory note. That was used to create the money for the loan. I'm here, and what I want to emphasize is Cattle National Bank foreclosed on my home. They still have the promissory note, and they took my home. They have assets that are arguably worth over $550,000. If you use a pledge, which is the promissory note, and you foreclose on it, you take the collateral, you give back the promissory note. They still have both of those assets.
And you haven't given them the property.
They have the property. They have possession of the property. They have the title to the property. The property has had a trustee's deed filed on it.
Are you still living in the property?
I am not.
When did you vacate the property?
Last March.
And they had owned it since they had foreclosed and had it finalized in 2012. Am I correct on that?
It was under appeal, and it was under litigation the whole time.
And you continued to live in it from 2012 until sometime last year?
I did. It was under litigation. What I still want to get back to is they have both assets. I have asked to see the asset. They foreclosed on my home without even presenting the original document. And in addition to that, I asked to see it.
To see it?
I've not seen it.
What are you referring to now? The promissory note?
The original promissory note.
Have there been any other efforts to collect on the promissory note since the house has been returned to the bank?
No, and that I know of.
So there's no harm?
No harm.
Well, how are you harmed
that
by not having the promissory note?
That promissory note is still out there. Mm-hmm. From what I understand now about our financial system, that promissory note was probably sold. The promissory note and my signature...
Do you have none of that's in our record, though, right? None of this argument has been presented to the district court.
The argument for them not being able to hang on to both of them, that is something that is an established part of law. You can't keep both.
But my question is, this issue hasn't been addressed by the district court in the case that we are deciding right now.
I have asked that it be addressed multiple times. Right now when I'm talking to you, I don't recall the exact times and dates when I asked. I tried to get it put in escrow with the court. That was denied. I tried to get the promissory note brought forward as an original. That was denied by Mahoney and the bankruptcy court. So I have tried.
At the time that the bank foreclosed using the trust deed, how much did you owe on the house on that promissory note?
They asserted it was $266,000.
Do you disagree with that
amount?
They
did not put up any money for that loan. The money was created with my signature using my credit. They hypothecated my credit to make the money for that loan. The bank never proved it put up a dime of loan money.
Well,
Brian
Lavelle. Did you pay for your house?
Pardon?
Did you pay for your house?
The construction loan paid for the house.
And where was the construction?
My credit was used to do that.
Where was the construction loan from?
Cattle National Bank.
So, I don't understand. If they advanced the money on
the
promissory note.
They did not advance any money, sir.
I thought you said they'd
bring
the construction loan.
The money was used. The money was created with my signature on a loan document. They accessed my credit through the Federal Reserve Bank. The bank never proved to anybody that it put up a dime of money of the bank's. Brian Lavelle said they just kind of had a pile of money in the middle of the bank, and that was where the money came from. According to the Federal Reserve own publication, they create money. That's why we have an inflationary economy. Our whole system of money depends on credit. We don't have any money in our system. There is no such thing as money. The only thing I have in my wallet are Federal Reserve notes. A note is a loan document. It's just a succession of discharging debt, of replacing one debt with another debt. If I pay the loan with a note that's in my wallet, all I've done is paid a loan with another loan, and I owe you.
So there were notes that were used to construct your house, is that correct?
There was one promissory note that was
used. But there was some documents that were used, green maybe, that have numbers on it, or a check that had amount that was paid to the construction company and then paid to the subs for the building of your house?
There were checks used to pay those, I assume.
And where did the money from those checks, where did that come from?
It came from my credit. They accessed my credit through the Federal Reserve Bank. That's what the licensees do all the time.
Okay.
Banks don't loan money anymore. It's against the law for them to loan their depositors money.
Okay.
They can't loan your money to me and also have it in your account at the same time. They can't do that.
You didn't use your own money to build your home.
I used a lot of my own money, and the bank stole that as well. They stole all my equity in it. And what's more, with this case leapfrogged my case for quiet title, which is $899. That one should have been decided first.
Didn't the decision on the ejectment action essentially determine the title in the property, so the same result occurred?
It did. Whether it should have not is... Should have,
but by Nebraska law, an ejectment action decides title, correct?
Nebraska law should not be applying in this situation. Nebraska statute, I'm not subject to statute.
Why is
this
that?
This loan...
Excuse me, why are you not subject to statute?
Nebraska I'm a law. Private person here talking. The statute laws apply to corporate entities. I'm not a corporate entity. I'm apparently
you don't
the agent for the entity that bears my name, which is where they access the credit.
You don't think the Nebraska statutes apply to your case?
I didn't say they didn't apply to my case. I said they don't apply to me.
You don't have to, you don't have to abide by the statute.
Pardon?
You don't have to abide by the statute.
My point in being here today...
Excuse me. You don't have to abide by the statutes. Yes or no?
I am a private person.
Yes or no, please.
Statutes do not apply to private persons.
And do you have any authority for that?
Statutes are here. They're corporate statutes for entities that deal with each other in paper. I'm here to talk about the fact that Cattle National Bank has two assets and they can't keep both of those assets. This court cannot let that decision stand while they have both of those assets. If it's no big deal for me to have my promissory note, then why can't I get it?
How much was your property sold for?
The bank sold it to itself for $276,000.
And how much did you owe at that time?
$266,000, according to them.
So there would be $10,000 that should be coming back to you?
I didn't say that, and that's not what I'm here to argue, sir.
Did you make these same arguments in the bankruptcy proceeding?
Some of them, yes, but there are things that are not known. If, as you know from looking at the case, there was $30,000 of my money that I paid the bank that disappeared on their loan history summary. Then when they did an alternate form of that for this case, then that correction was made and that money appeared. So some of the issues were addressed in the bank early on in the bankruptcy court situation. But when it came to this case, other information came out. There was information from a deposition by Brian Lavelle that wasn't allowed to come forward.
Did you make that information known to Judge Girard in the appeal from the bankruptcy?
At that time, I'm not sure I know. We're going back several years now. At that time, I'm not sure I know it. I'm still wanting to make this point. The bank cannot have both of these assets. They can't keep my promise to pay, take my home, and say, you can't have your promise to pay back. There's always a trade. You trade one for the other. They can't do that.
So if the promissory note was returned to you,
no,
we'd be done. No, if it were to be returned to you.
No, we would not be done, because then all the other arguments in the case stand. I'm here to talk about, it's an equity issue, and this court should have equity at the top of the list. Equity rules over the statute.
Do you understand, though, in an appeal, we can only address what was done in the trial court below? We can't address new arguments. Do you understand that?
I've heard that. I do not believe that that is the case. When there's statutes underneath it,
it's our
equity
law.
Prevails.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
I believe you're out of time. I appreciate you being here. You may step back. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is John Guthrie. I'm appearing on behalf of the Cattle National Bank and Trust Company. Two cases currently in court this time. I want to focus on what I think is evidence showing that this is an ideal case for the summary judgment that was granted by the trial court. Basically, the trial court started with a judgment from the bankruptcy court and the United States District Court with the issues involving this case in the state district court. Those issues included challenging the bankruptcy court.
Mr. Guthrie, could you please speak louder?
I'll try, Your Honor. I'm sorry about me. Excuse me.
If you would like to move further over to the side so that you can hear him better, you're certainly welcome to do that, Ms. Anthony.
The bankruptcy court issue started out with two things raised in her bankruptcy, Ms. Anthony's bankruptcy filing. And one was the challenge to whether we could get relief from the automatic stay so that we could foreclose on our trust deed procedure and the debt that was owed to the bank. The second was the contest was about the claim that we filed in that bankruptcy case setting forth the amount that was owed, and the documents supported that amount. Bankruptcy case was a trial to the court. The evidence was live evidence given, and evidence, other documents were introduced at that time. The court found in favor of the bankrupt bank on the validity of getting relief from the stay, and in fact found that the bankruptcy was filed in bad faith by Ms. Anthony. The court also found that claim, proof of claim and the amount of debt owed, the documents supporting that debt in favor of the bank, and allowed the claim. From that point forward, we went forward to the trial of her motion for summary judgment. All the issues such as that she raised in the brief, including the validity of loan documents, allegations of fraud, statutory violations alleged, those decisions all were consumed by the bankruptcy court's decision, or could have been consumed, including even such things as meeting of the minds regarding the terms of the contract. They were all before the bankruptcy court. They were all before the United States District Court, which affirmed the bankruptcy court's decision. It made specific findings that each of those items were sufficient to establish the right for the bank to go forward. Otherwise, the bankruptcy would have stopped us from trying to collect on our foreclosure. Trustee sale, it would have stopped us from claiming the amount of debt owed. There'd been a claim for set-off or counterclaims raised. Those would have been considered during the bankruptcy court. This case was presented with that evidence to the trial court, Judge Merritt at the time, along with additional evidence that came for the sale process after the bankruptcy discharges. Let us proceed forward. The evidence presented at that time was all of the statutory requirements for a trustee sale were complied with and sufficient by the district court's decision.
Does the record reflect, Mr. Guthrie, as to the amount of the debt that was owed at the time that you asked for the trustee sale?
Both when we asked for the trustee sale, the amount of the debt was known. There was a bid amount that time by the bank. But if you're asking, was that amount the same for the bankruptcy court?
No. I'm asking if the amount appears in our record, show how much was owed at the time that you obtained the permission to proceed with the trustee's deed.
Recollection is the bankruptcy record reflected the amount of the claim that was allowed at that point in time, which would have accumulated. There was no further additional principal loan. There would have been some accumulated interest since that time.
So was the amount that the bank bid on the property the same as the amount that was owed on the note?
I think it was actually a little bit less than was owed on the note, but
Is the bank asking for the additional amount on the note?
No. In fact, the trustee statute provides that we cannot seek a deficiency if we don't do so within 90 days of the trustee sale.
And you haven't done so?
No, and that's been years since that's occurred.
And has the promissory note been shown as paid then?
I don't know if there's anything in the record that shows that one or the other, but we've testified in the district court. The district court asked a question about, there was an issue about a deficiency coming up, and that's where that came up in the
okay.
I can't tell you the exact amount over the holding of the promissory note, but by law, we cannot seek a deficiency on the promissory note
right after
90 days with that. We haven't done so within 90 days, the trustee said.
Just in view of what had been said, I was under the impression that possibly there was an action for deficiency.
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Did the bankruptcy court also decide the issue of whether proper notice of the default had been given to Ms. Anthony?
Yes, the issue of that would have been subsumed in the issue we couldn't have come forward with. We hadn't validated. Well, at that point, let me take that back, Your Honor. At that point, we had not started the trustee sale foreclosure process because it stopped by the bankruptcy. What it did allow us to do is go forward with that, and the district court, the state district court, did determine the notices were proper and sufficient under the statutes, and not the bankruptcy court. We wouldn't have done that. But what would have been included was, one of the examples was that Ms. Anthony didn't receive one or more of the notices. The statute that it applied to requires us to send the notice. It doesn't require us to see that it was delivered. Evidence showed that we sent it by certified mail. It was rejected two times. It was not picked up. But the statute requires the sending of the notice in a timely manner with certain information. That shows in the records that information was as required by statute.
The decision of the bankruptcy court was upheld by Judge Girard, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
And then was that also upheld by the Eighth Circuit? Was there an appeal?
No appeal from that one. Earlier in this scenario with the parties, there had been a U.S. District Court case filed by Ms. Anthony against the bank, and she lost there, was dismissed, but on jurisdictional grounds. She appealed to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, and that that affirm that district court's decision.
Thank you.
She did file an adversary proceeding in the bankruptcy case as well. That was just missed based on the decision by the bankruptcy court, our proof of claim and our motion for relief from the stay. Other issue involved. So from that point forward, we went forward based on additional evidence that came in during the summary judgment hearing. There was no contrary evidence to those points there, which is alleged, such as meeting the minds. That was an issue that was, our position is there are certain things that could have been also raised at the bankruptcy level to challenge the validity of our debt, and that wasn't raised there. He now wants to raise it at this point in time. The court took all those things into consideration, the district court into consideration. But it started with, as I said, the foundation of the motion for summary judgment was a decision from the United States Bankruptcy Court and the United States U.S. District Court approving that. Since that time, we've had two district court judges look at this information and both independently decided that these claims of the bank were appropriate. In other words, the defenses raised by Ms. Anthony were inappropriate or not valid. She didn't submit it. She said more. I think there was one comment from Judge Merritt that points out, based on Ms. Anthony's claims are based no more than on her belief and her arguments, which are characterized more correctly as conclusions based upon guess, speculations, conjecture, and choice of possibilities. As Judge Merritt noted in his order, those do not create material issues of fact for the purpose of summary judgment. The other issue in this section is about bonds.
Before you go there, so you mentioned, Mr. Guthrie, that the meeting of the minds argument or counterclaim could have been raised prior and so should be barred. What about the argument under the Occupying Claimants Act?
Well, Occupying Claimants Act could have been raised there too, because it would have been a set off or for count amount of the claim. And but secondly, there was a motion to amend to include the Occupying Claimants Act later on in front of the district court. It was denied, and it was a denial on its face. It would have been futile to do so, because the Occupying Claimants Act does not apply there's a case cited in our brief. I think it's 184 Nebraska, I can't 529, that says arrangements between borrower and lender do not fit into the Occupying Claimants Act. So yes, it could have been raised, and it would have affected the bankruptcy court's decision if it had been valid. Secondly, it would have been futile to raise it because it doesn't apply to this situation. That's why it was also appropriate to deny the motion to amend the case.
Thank you.
The bonds, two of the bonds were last bond for supersedes was $10,000 stricken by the state district court. And those monies were turned back over to Ms. Anley. The other two, there's two $5,000 bonds that were released by the court and paid to the bank. And basically, if you look at the decision, though, those appear to be reasonable, rational decisions on the bond treatment for the bank. And that issue was decided between after hearing in front of the state district court. Questions on the issue of either the bond or the judgment action?
I do not.
We have no questions.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I believe the appellant is out of time. Is that correct? Very well. On this particular case, we will show that 15900 and 16003 are submitted, and we'll proceed on then with the second case, which is 15899. Ms. Anthony?